I was looking for one of my songs randomly. I noticed it wasn't on Spotify or Tidal, and I thought it was a bug in the app. And then I noticed that I had some social media notifications, and I looked at them, and people were yelling at me for not having my, for taking down my music. People were like, why did you take your music off Spotify? And I'm like, hold up. So I got my laptop out and then realized I was just nuked from all of the platforms. And at first, I had no communication whatsoever, so I had no idea what was going on. Turned out it was TuneCore got a false streaming notification from Spotify, and their response was to just remove...
A fraudulent streaming activity notification?
Yeah. And their response was to just, without telling me or anyone, to just remove all of my music from all platforms, whether they're streaming or for sale.
So you didn't get any warnings or anything like that from TuneCore saying, hey, we've got this notification from Spotify. They have detected fraudulent streaming activity on your music. Here's a warning, or we're going to have to remove it, or can you help us understand what's going on? None of that. They just took it down. This episode is brought to you by DistroKid. DistroKid is a distribution service that can get your music into all the DSPs like Spotify, Apple Music, TikTok, Tidal, Instagram. Over a million artists have used DistroKid. I'm one of those artists. I've used DistroKid to get my music out, distribute some of my songs. As you know, as I look into all of these distribution services, I test them out. And DistroKid is great. They offer a ton of features, annual fee, unlimited uploads, and you keep 100% of your royalties. Check out distrokid.com. What's going on? Welcome to the New Music Business. I'm your host, Ari Herstand, author of How to Make It in the New Music Business, the book. Third edition is out now everywhere. All versions, hardcover, ebook, audiobook, however you consume books, you can find it. Today, my guest is Ben Jordan. He is a musician. His artist project is called The Flashbulb. This project has hundreds of thousands of monthly listeners, millions and millions of streams. He said last year, just on Spotify, he had about 3 million listeners. He's made over $500,000 from his distributor, TuneCore, from streaming revenue. What happened to him just over a month ago was all of his music got removed from all the streaming services, and he had no idea why. Now, he's going to tell you the story of exactly what happened, but this goes in line with what I have been spending a lot of time in researching and investigating, and I've spoken to so many artists. I've lost count of how many artists I've spoken to where this has happened, where their distributor has removed their music citing streaming fraud, fraudulent streaming activity. And distributors kind of pass the buck off to Spotify, and Spotify, they're saying that Spotify has notified them that there is a significant amount of fraudulent streaming activity. Spotify has said that, well, it has been reported, I should say, and Spotify has not denied it, that if there is over 90% of the streams have been deemed by them as fraudulent, as artificial streaming activity, they're going to start fining distributors. And because of this, a lot of the distributors have cracked down on their artists when they've been notified by Spotify that there's been artificial streaming activity. Now, the two biggest players in this space, and that I've heard from artists that have been the most aggressive at these takedowns, are the distributors TuneCore and DistroKid. Now, DistroKid has said from their own estimates that they distribute 30 to 40% of all music in the world. All the music that hits the DSPs, all of the streaming services, is sent by DistroKid. Now, TuneCore also controls a large market share of the artists. And for those of you unfamiliar, I'm sure everybody listening to this is very familiar with TuneCore and DistroKid, but they're distribution platforms where you pay an annual fee. They do not take a commission, and they get your music and they put it on these streaming platforms. Full disclosure, both TuneCore and DistroKid are Ari's Take partners. I have used both TuneCore and DistroKid as an artist to distribute my own music. This is just the reality of where we're at as an industry, where these distributors are feeling the pressure from namely Spotify, but all the DSPs will send fraudulent streaming activity reports, and they're cracking down on the distributors, or the distributors are cracking down on the artists. But the problem here is, and Ben and I discussed this, is that it's oftentimes not the artist's fault. And that is the big issue here that is just not being acknowledged by the distributors and Spotify. They're blaming the artists. It's really infuriating because Spotify and the distributors are, you should see the language that they're using. I mean, I'm going to put it in my Variety article, but they're blaming the artists and they're saying that the artists are bad actors and they're chastising the artists and they're belittling the artists. And, you know, the support reps are basically non-existent and they won't help the artists either get their music back up or they make them essentially like sign away their life saying that I will never do this again. And the artists are like, but I didn't do anything. Because what's happening, and here's the thing, is because there are actual bad actors out there. There are actual people who are scamming and are committing fraud and manipulating the system for their own financial gain. That's not most of the artists. Now, there are a good number of artists who are ignorant, meaning they don't understand that you shouldn't hire a playlisting company. But that being said, it's like Spotify now just put the threshold that you need at least 1,000 streams before you're going to start getting paid. And so artists are like, well, how do I get 1,000 streams? Well, playlists, I heard that they're popular, so let me just try to get on some playlists. And then they don't realize that those playlists are botted, and it's hard to tell if a playlist is botted or not. And there's these services out there. We discuss a few of them, Ben and I, that charge artists for consideration. And, you know, DistroGood and TuneCore are like, well, it's always the artist's fault. This is the company line. They're just saying it's always the artist's fault. And I'm here to say it's not always the artist's fault. There are legitimate bot attacks against artists right now that are not paying for artificial streams, that are not paying for playlist placements. They're not even paying for playlisting services that are quote unquote legit, that are recommended by these distributors. We're not even paying marketing agencies, nothing. And you'll hear, I pressed Ben on it. I was like, well, so what services did you use to create these artificial streams? You know, he'll hear his answer and we talk about it. But there are bot attacks happening right now, and nobody seems to understand where they're coming from or what's happening. There's these attacks from on all the DSPs, but primarily Spotify, and artists are being penalized by this. And so they get a bot attack, their streams spike up, and maybe they last for a little bit, maybe it drops off. They don't know what to do. There's no recourse here because there's no solutions that the distributors are presenting, that Spotify's presenting. And so the solution for the distributors is just take the song down. Once they get notified from Spotify that there's been artificial streaming activity on the song, rip the song down, ban the artist. And because it's more beneficial for these distributors that have millions of artists to just take kind of this sledgehammer approach, because sure, if they piss off a few thousand of them, their business is just fine. But these are real people. These are real artists, real human beings that are getting caught up in this. And I know for a fact that a lot of these artists are not dumb. They're not ignorant, and that they're the victims here. And so for the distributors and Spotify and the DSPs that are listening to this, I would hope that you would stop charging these artists and having such disregard for them and stop blaming them for all of this fraudulent streaming activity when oftentimes it's not their fault. And stop saying they're committing fraud when they're not. There might be fraudulent activity detected on their account or on their songs. That doesn't mean that they've committed fraud. Do you understand? Like, that is a big distinction here. And so I really appreciate and caution these distributors with their language. Stop saying they're committing fraud. These are, because maybe they're not. The correlation does not equal causation. We're in this period right now where Spotify is cracking down. They're adding pressure to the distributors. The distributors are then cracking down on their artists, and artists lose in the end. So Ben highlighted this because what happened to him last month, there's hundreds of these conversations happening on Reddit, happening on X, happening on Instagram, happening all over the place. And I've spoken to tons of artists, and this is just not sustainable. Like this needs to get figured out. And so I'm doing my part, at least initially right now, to try to shed some light on this, but there needs to be serious policy changes around all of this on Spotify and with the distributors. You can find Ben Jordan on, he's got a very active YouTube channel. Just search Ben, that's with two N's. Jordan, I encourage you to watch his video. We'll link it in the show notes of his video that of what happened to him. You can find his artist project, The Flash Bulb. His music is back up on streaming services. It was down for a few weeks, but it's finally back up. You can find him on all the socials as well, Instagram, all of that stuff. You can find me at Ari Herstand on Instagram. You can find all of us that make the show happen at Ari's Take on Instagram, TikTok, X, Threads, Facebook, all that stuff. You can find us there. Visit ariestake.com. Get on the email list. That's where you're going to find the most relevant up-to-date information about the new music business. But right now, if you could just pause this episode, hit that 5-star review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. Hit the follow, the subscribe button. Follow us however you're listening to this or watching this on YouTube. Give us a thumbs up. All that stuff. All right, let's kick into the show. Ben Jordan, welcome to the show.
Hi, how are you?
Good. So you've had quite the month. for those of you, for the people that are listening that are not familiar, you know, I've been watching your videos and following along on your tweet saga and all of that, and you know, currently writing a piece for Variety all on the craziness of what's been happening on the landscape of quote-unquote artificial streaming with DIY distributors. Mm-hmm. For the people, if you could just let us know what happened in your own words, just kind of like what went down in your case.
So I've been a musician for my entire adult life, professionally, like making a living off of it. In one shape or form, you know, the landscape of the music business has changed so many times mm-hmm. that it's always different. But So ultimately, we're talking like between over 2 years, I think 2.6 million listeners or something like that. So it's a pretty substantial numbers okay. that are generally yeah. above what the average like DistroKid or TuneCore thing is.
Sure.
And so, yeah, one day I was just looking at my... I was looking for one of my songs randomly because I was actually working on a score and I was just like, oh, let's have it sound like this. You know, there's an instrument and I was like, let's, and I noticed it wasn't on Spotify or Tidal and I thought it was a bug in the app. And then I noticed that I had some social media notifications and I looked at them and people were yelling at me for not having my, for taking down my music. People were like, why did you take yeah. your music off Spotify? And I'm like, hold up. So I got my laptop out and then realized I was just nuked from all of the platforms. And at first I had no communication whatsoever. So I had no idea what was going on. I thought at first that maybe I had been very critical of Spotify in the past. On the business side of it more than anything else.
Sure.
And Spotify is definitely, you know, higher ups at Spotify are definitely aware of it. And I've had exchanges with them. And so I was like, maybe they were just like, you know what? You're not on our service anymore. Bye-bye. And so that was my mm-hmm. initial take, but turned out it was TuneCore got a false streaming notification from Spotify. And their response was to just remove...
A fraudulent streaming activity notification?
Yeah. And yeah. their response was to just, without telling me or anyone, to just remove all of my music from all platforms. Whether they're streaming,
so
or
you didn't get any warnings or anything like
Nothing.
That from TuneCore
yeah.
saying, "Hey, we've got this notification from Spotify. They have detected fraudulent streaming activity on your music. Here's a warning, or we're just we're gonna have to remove it, or can you give us some? Can you help us understand what's going on? None of that. They just took it down.
The first thing that I heard from TuneCore and the whole saga was probably. You know, close to 48 hours later, and it was from the CEO. I talked
Andrea
to
Gleason.
Two people from Believe Music before speaking to anybody mm-hmm. from TuneCore's owner.
Oh, wow.
And I mean, I think that also goes to show that the reason I got results is because I have these relationships on the business side of this. And so, mm-hmm. yeah, that was the reason I got these results because people were pinging Andrea, you know, like privately and being like, hey, what the hell's going on with Ben?
And you have a big platform. I mean, you have 20 some thousand Twitter followers. And I saw there's a lot of activity there. And so, you know, so anyway, she pings you back and she's like, whoops, sorry. And put your music right back up. Or what happens next?
She asked me to be patient.
Okay.
And it told me that that support wasn't working on the weekends to deal with that. And I was like, well, maybe I shouldn't have nuked my entire catalog on the weekends then.
Right.
You know, but yeah, I mean, it was an unpleasant experience. I finally got in touch with someone else from TuneCore. The people from Believe were actually really empathic about it and understood. And then I just started diving in.
For the record, Believe is the company that owns TuneCore.
And so, yeah, I mean, they were more empathic, and then somebody from TuneCore finally reached out, and they're like, you know, this, yeah, we should have communicated better with you, and all this stuff. And also, then I was added as a VIP artist. They're like, you should have been a VIP artist before. And I was like, well, hold on a second. Like, this is happening to people, your customers who are paying you money. In a weird way, I'm kind of glad I got to experience, you know, the non-VIP treatment. Because on my YouTube channel, that actually is an important thing that should be talked about and looked into more. And I kind of just put that hat on immediately and was like, all right, well, this is also part of my mission and platform is to sort of figure these things out and try and guide musicians as best as I can. And unfortunately, I can't. I don't have any, because there isn't a good answer. And that's the worst answer of all is, you know, the worst thing you could tell them is, nope, it's hopeless. It's very bad right now with the fake streaming situation. Yeah. Everybody's at risk. So,
well, I mean, you know, you're doing your part in at least making noise about this. This is how I discovered you. And you know, this is getting the conversation started and everything. And this is step one. You know, I'm more of an optimist, a perpetual optimist, if you will. And I believe that, you know, change will come and is happening. But unfortunately, you and hundreds, if not thousands, of other artists are getting caught up in this right now. And I've spoken to many, many, many other artists actually before today, before speaking to you, where this has happened to them from TuneCore, from DistroKid, from other distributors. So tell me, just continue the story. So just like what happened? So TuneCore, you know, Believe, was it you were in touch with Believe? They were, you know, helped you a little bit. TuneCore reached out. So did they get your music back up? Would they withhold any earnings? Did you hear from Spotify? What was going on?
I mean, to be frank, I think TuneCore, once they heard from Believe, and then also once I publicly said, like, I've talked to an attorney, like, this is, you know, this is like a big deal. I think then they just, you know, retracted the nails and put the music back up. It took about 2 weeks. Some of it got up before some other stuff did. And, you know, it was still kind of messy. I think looking, at least the last time I looked and compared the stats, I think my monthly listeners went down by over 18% as a result of it.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And so it's going to be interesting to see how this compounds, you know, with the Spotify algorithm and all that stuff. Because this eventually is going to be hundreds of thousands of listeners that I've lost because people make playlists, music goes dead in the playlists, they remove it, or it gets removed automatically sometimes, I assume. And so it could end up being like a significant loss. I'm fortunate enough to not be like terrified, but if I were only making money from music, I would be, you know, that would be a pretty serious thing. But it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. And it's also interesting to find out, you know, how much support I have outside of streaming platforms too, because to be completely honest, that's always been a thought in my head, is like, I kind of just don't want to be on them anymore. I kind of wish that I could, you know, exist separate from them. But the bigger problem is that I find that I'm punishing my listeners a lot of times when I do that, because people don't really, you know, a lot of people don't know how to download MP3s. You can't even access your file system on an iPhone. So it's like, It's right, not as easy right. as it was when we all had Zunes or you know, when we all had these MP3 players.
Yeah, iPods and stuff. I completely agree and empathize. I mean, it's like, I like how you put it, punishing the listener, because it's like, you know, listeners and fans, music lovers have a certain way that they prefer to experience and consume music these days. Oftentimes that's through streaming services, and pretty often that's through Spotify. And if, you know, you choose not to have your music there, then you're actually making your audience do a lot more work to just go out of their way to try to listen to your music. And they just might not at the end of the day. They have their own way, their own routines, their own ways that they enjoy and prefer to listen to music. And so it's kind of like, it's hard to tell the audience, like, this is how you should listen to music, when they're like, well, no, this is how I like listening to music. I would just like to do it this way. And then if your music's not there, it's kind of tough.
There's a bigger problem hiding there, too, is that when mm-hmm. with Spotify, that I mean, I would say Apple was the first time that tech really touched down in the music industry in a hard way. But
with iTunes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Spotify would be the first time that you had blitzscaling in the music industry. Blitzscaling is like what Amazon did. And the reason it's popular now is because Amazon did it in the 90s and early 2000s. And they just basically got a bunch of front loaded money from investors and said, look, mm-hmm. we're just going to get market dominance and this is going to work. And then next thing you know, even Walmart is trying to play catch up with Amazon. And if you said that in mm-hmm. like 1999, people would laugh at you. People would be like, nobody's going to beat right. Walmart ever. Well, happened.
Right.
So Spotify is the music version of that, right? Like, mm-hmm. but they've not made a profit. They want to be profitable at some point, but growth is the only thing that matters. And in doing that, they took a lot of venture capital money, enormous amounts of venture capital money, and subsidized how people listen to music, subsidize their experience and just their lifestyle of having unlimited music all the time on play whenever they want, whether they're listening to Metallica or, you know, their mm-hmm. their friend's son's band that lives down the block. Mm-hmm. Like, they have it all in one place. And we're simply, and it, people hate hearing this, but the truth is we're simply not paying enough for that to sustain music. Yeah. And it's still being subsidized by venture capital, and it's going to be a very, very hard climb out of that hole, because it's very easy to make people's lifestyles better, but it's very hard to then say, no, you're actually not paying enough.
Yeah, I mean, I understand your logic. I mean, I am going to just remind you know, everyone of the history of you know, Spotify and iTunes came out of a time when the music industry was in free fall. You know, we're talking about like 1999 was a previous peak of recorded music revenue. Napster, of course, hits. Everybody gets their music for free. Initially, iTunes was like, okay, here's a way around that. You know, we can now pay for that. That didn't really help. It was a Band-Aid on a bullet wound. The music industry was still in free fall. It bottomed out in 2015. And streaming single-handedly brought back the revenue to the recorded music industry. So, you know, last year, the numbers just came out, depending on which numbers you're following, whether it's Midea at $35 billion or the IFPI at like $27 billion or something. We've officially, you know, passed the peak of, you know, in just in dollars, not quite adjusted for inflation, but we're almost there of where recorded music revenues have come. So, you know, all that being said, it's worth noting that, like, the music industry was in a free fall. Like, nobody had it figured out. Streaming did this. Sure, Spotify hasn't been, you know, quite profitable. Some quarters they have been, you know, but overall, sure. You know, one could argue that consumers are paying more for music annually than they did in the CD era. It's like, you know, if you pay $10, $12 a month now, that's over, you know, $120, $30 a year, whereas previously they were paying $70. So whoever's metrics you want to follow here, but, you know, point taken, I get it. You know, it's like the way that money is divvied up and sliced up isn't as equitable, I would argue, as it was in kind of the sales era, where, you know, right now, it's curious hearing this from your perspective, and I want to touch on this in a second, with somebody who has so much music out there, who benefits from this system, the more music that you put out, you know, the algorithms jump on it, and, you know, people can, like, passively listen to music, and artists get rewarded for that, or labels get rewarded for that, whereas previously that didn't happen. Like, you turn on the radio, artists aren't making money from terrestrial radio back in the day, and, you know, it's only when a fan would go buy a CD or a record or something like that is when the money actually transacted, and you needed fans for that purpose. Now it's like, it's not, you know, people are, artists, creators, labels are making money from passive listening, whereas, you know, they weren't making it in the radio era, but they're making it from passive listening now. But if you have fans, it's harder to monetize that relationship. And it's like, because fans are paying $12 a month to Spotify, $11 a month for Spotify or Apple or whatever, and like, you're getting fractions of a fraction of a fraction of a penny to maybe their favorite artist. And there's just that system's broken. So it's a give and take. Like, I'm not a complete doomsday with, like, streaming destroyed the music industry. I have seen artists that have thrived and, you know, independent, completely DIY artists that would have never made it in the era of, you know, download CDs and in the, you know, where the labels were the gatekeepers. But on the flip side, I see artists with hardcore super fans that just cannot sustain on this revenue model that streaming has presented.
Yeah. I mean, first of all, with my library of music, which is quite large in comparison to most other artists, that's a really good recipe for streaming. That's really good. I mean, that's a lot of IP that gets streamed a lot. And I am the success story, the independent musician success story, where, like, early on I bought my rights back from record labels and publishers. I own it all. I don't cut it with anybody. I mean, it's really the best position you could possibly be in for streaming. And most of my criticism of streaming platforms and the way they're handled is not the technology. I think the technology, and I think the overall, I even think recommendation algorithms are a great thing. I think it's the way that it's set up. First of all, the way that the royalties are divvied up. Most people don't realize that, you know, that money is front loaded to major labels first. Like, when Sony got involved with Spotify at first, they got shares in the company. They got upfront publishing. You know, they got license fees. They got all these things, and then independent musicians were an afterthought, and we got what was left of that. And the end result is I'm making a lot less than what Drake makes for one stream. And there's nothing I can do about that other than not have my music on the platform. And the platform has grown so big that not having my music on the platform then punishes my listeners, and I end up isolating myself.
Right. And to clarify that point, what you're saying is because every label negotiates their rates directly with the streaming services. I don't think a lot of people understand that. The distributors have to negotiate their rates as well. Sometimes the indie distributors are part of the part of a collective that can help negotiate on their behalf. That is why a Drake stream.
Yeah,
theoretically, we don't know.
Yeah, it could be. That is, Drake could have a terrible deal. We never know. But assumedly,
we don't know.
They would have never signed the dotted line.
Right, and so we can assume that major labels are making more than indie distributors because of that. We don't know. That's not public information. That's just an assumption. I once tried to crowdsource this, and I gathered hundreds of artists royalty reports from their various distributors to try to see which distributor was paying more of they struck better deals. But it's really, really hard to do, because not only no stream is treated equally either. This is the other issue, is just one stream, even if it's from two TuneCore artists, each stream is going to be treated differently based on the listener. So if the listener's in Mexico versus the US versus France, that stream, and if that listener is paying the premium subscriber fee, the family plan, they're listening on ad supported, all of those calculations are done differently.
Yeah, it's very easily, but I guess even unintentionally obfuscated. It's pretty difficult. Yeah. But ultimately, I do think that if it would be, I guess, for example, Senator Rashida's, I don't want to mispronounce her last name, but I've looked over that proposal.
Tlaib, yeah.
And I don't really understand it. A lot of people are asking me what I think about it, my take on it. And I'm just like, I don't really understand why we would tax the listener for this when I feel like it would be a much easier sell for Senate and for Congress in general to say, hey, all these artists aren't being paid the same. There's special backdoor deals going on. Like it's easy. It would be very, very smart to assume that Universal Music Group artists are getting more than independent artists. And while knowing also that Universal Music Group owns a pretty significant stake of Spotify. And there's a lot of insider things going on, and it's unfair. And so if we're caring about the fairness of musician, maybe taxing listeners would be something we'd want to do after making the equity pool pretty much an even slate for all streams. But
yeah,
what would happen?
Yeah,
the major labels would, I think they would threaten to pull out the same way they did with TikTok. So.
Right. I mean, sure. So, and just to clarify, they're calling it the Living Wage for Musicians Act that Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib from Michigan introduced just a few weeks ago. And from my understanding, and I'm still wrapping my head around it too, but, you know, they're proposing trying to make it a penny a stream, which also I think, again, this is not necessarily the appropriate solution here, but they're also trying to set up an organization similar to a sound exchange where part of the money doesn't have to flow through distributors and labels who will take a cut and can obfuscate kind of the way that money is divvied up and all of that. So it would transfer more directly. Now, it's worth mentioning that Spotify and Apple Music both pay out about 2/3 of the revenue that they bring in. And as you said, Spotify's still not profitable, so it's like the money has to come from somewhere. So many argue that they should be raising their subscription prices, which I'm not against, which then brings more money into the whole ecosystem. I mean, I would argue, I think the whole pro rata payment system should change to a user generated payment model where the fan's subscription fee of let's just call it $10 a month, if they only listen to the Flashbulb this month, then all 10 of those dollars go directly to you, less the platform's commission. I feel that is the most fair way to do all of this. But of course, when SoundCloud and Midia kind of tested this out and they came out with a report on it, it showcased that kind of these middle class artists made more, but the superstars made less. And so the major labels are like, no way, we're not doing that. So, you know, they need everybody to agree to a model like that for it to change.
Mike Pelchinski, the person who authored that for SoundCloud, is actually, I brought him to VoiceSwap as a result of that work. And now he's part of our, he owns part of the company. Yeah. Like he's nice. Brilliant and made that. One of my
VoiceSwap.
Pardon? VoiceSwap? Yeah.
Tell me about VoiceSwap.
VoiceSwap is the most dreaded thing in the world. It's an AI audio company. But the whole point of it is paying musicians and not doing anything without musicians' consent. And so it was initially founded by, DJ Fresh was the first person to contact me about it. And it was him and a developer, Nico, who's brilliant. And DJ Fresh contacted me and said, hey, I'm trying to make this AI voice cloning thing. And I was initially just kind of like, nah, you know, there's already five companies trying to get me to feature them on the channel. And he's like, no, look, I'm trying to do this, trying to pay artists. And I ended up having a couple meetings with them, ended up joining the team. I ended up designing, initially making an equity model where a pool of equity is what pays artists in addition to license fees. And so if the company gets $1 billion investment at some point, then artists will get dividends from that. And so it's that, and that's like in the foundation of it. And then beyond that, our team just, you know, continued to grow. And if, so for example, if you wanted to clone your voice through us, as it is right now, somebody would have to have your permission to be able to release the music anywhere. They would have to pay you whatever license fee you wanted. And now we're actually distributing directly to DSPs to where you can, you would be able to get royalties from Spotify plays that utilized your voice.
Real quick, I want to let you know about DistroKid. Well, I'm sure you already know about DistroKid, but they are partners with Ari's Take, and they are a great company that can help get your music distributed to Spotify, Apple Music, TikTok, Tidal, Instagram, all of that. Over a million artists use DistroKid. I'm one of those artists. I have distributed some of my music in the past. And something I appreciate about DistroKid, as not just an artist, but someone who studies this space, is they have been one of the most innovative companies over the last 10 years. They came in and completely changed the game. One of the first companies offering unlimited uploads, and now most of the other distributors have had to change their policies to kind of copy and follow suit what DistroKid was doing, and the industry had changed, of course. DistroKid doesn't keep a commission. That means you keep 100% of your royalties and earnings from the DSPs. They also offer payment splitting. They call it splits, something that for me at this point is a deal breaker. I don't want to have to cut checks to all my collaborators and the producers and everybody else that is owed royalties and owed splits from my earnings. DistroKid will cut those checks directly. You can get them to your collaborators to sign up, and then DistroKid will cut all the checks to all your collaborators. And they were one of the first to offer that of the DIY self-service distributors. DistroKid continues to innovate. Check them out. If you need to get your music out there, DistroKid.com. And when you say you're distributing to DSPs, are you going through a distributor like a TuneCore? Or when you say you're distributing, are you creating?
We were initially going to, we had like things scheduled to meet with people from TuneCore and DistroKid and stuff. And this whole situation just made us kind of try to get the certifications and do it ourselves. And so I mean, we're it's interesting to it's been funny that that was sort of the bright side of it, is like it's been able to make we realize that it's actually not that difficult to distribute directly to Spotify if you're a company that's, you know, registered in, you know, if you have members in different countries and, you know, you have all the numbers and things that you need.
So. I want to get back to kind of this, what the impetus that kind of started this whole conversation and what happened to you. I just to kind of close the loop on it. So you said it took a couple weeks to get your music back up, but during that time period, because did you get any indication of what the fraudulent streaming activity was, and did they discover like, oh man, I had all these songs included on this botted playlist, or did you hire a playlisting service to kind of increase your streams or in your reach or something like that, or were you working with a marketing agency or something?
No marketing. I haven't worked with like a PR agency in like 10 years. I've never bought fake streams. I've actually dove pretty deep into fake streams to make videos on my channel about, like, because people are laundering money with Spotify streams and stuff like that in Sweden. And so so I do know a bit about it. I've talked to people who run fake streaming mills, you know, and like, but I knew that, you know, it generally wouldn't do much for me. However, one of the differences, I think, is a lot of times when you hear these stories, you have an artist who all of a sudden saw that they got 1,000 streams from, you know, a lot of times from Sweden, or a lot of times from areas, because those do pay higher royalties, like in Ireland and Sweden. And they'll see that, and then you'll read on like Reddit and places like that where people are like, I don't know what to do. These might be fake. I don't want to get banned. Unfortunately, because my numbers were already kind of up there, smaller streams like that, you know, like 1,000 extra, I wouldn't have really noticed. I wouldn't have picked up on it. And I also don't watch my numbers that closely because it literally looks like a periodic function or like a sine wave or something. You know, if you just look at the weekends, weekdays, like it's the growth is very slow and it's very, I mean,
there were no major spikes that stuck out to you.
I have the most boring stats in the world. They're not even worth looking at. Yeah. So there's like nothing to learn from them other than like, oh, people listen to music differently when they're not at work. And so yeah, I there was no activity that I could find. Of course, TuneCore said that they did an internal investigation initially. Or somebody from TuneCore told me that they did an internal investigation and found out that I was, you know, stripped. This is before I was a VIP, by the way, and told me that I was, found out that I was, they, what was the wording they used? They confirmed that I was using fraudulent streams. And of course I said, well, you're going to have to show me this because, you know, this may go to court. Like, you're going to have to show me this if you actually want to hold this position. You can't just accuse me of it, accuse me of fraud, and then, you know, do this. But I guess they weren't that sure anyway, because they ended up putting my music back up. So what really happened, Spotify is telling all of these distributors that they're going to charge them, what, $10 if a track, if they detect that a track is 90% streaming or something like that. They don't tell you what metrics they're using to decide that something is 90% streaming. I'm not even sure that they tell you what song it is or that they tell the distributor what song it is exactly. And then, however, they have not charged, to my knowledge, and I've talked to CEOs of three distributors at this point. To my knowledge, nobody has been charged the $10 yet, but distributors know that it can. Have they? Has that happened?
No, they have. Okay. No, similarly, I've been talking to the distributors and artists, and no artist has been fined, and the distributors haven't been yet either.
Yeah, but so from, you know, if I am the CEO of TuneCore, I'm crapping my pants a bit because all of a sudden Spotify might just wildly accuse me of having all these, you know, and I could end up with hundreds of thousands of dollars a month or more. I mean, the amount of artists that these distributors represent is massive. And so they just have a zero tolerance policy. They don't, in my opinion, TuneCore and DistroKid are understaffed. And that's because you're paying $20 a month for, or $20 a year for distribution through some of them. And like, what would you expect? You're getting what you're paying for. So, to go through like Symphonic or to go through a distributor where they take a cut where they're actually representing you. I mean, the cuts are sometimes as high as 20%. And that's, for me, that's a significantly more than I would ever pay a normal distributor for.
How much have you made from TuneCore with your music?
Over half a million.
Over half a million. Yeah. So, I mean, it makes sense because TuneCore doesn't take a percentage. They don't take commission, whereas, like you said, Symphonic and the other many others do. Anywhere from, you know, most of them take around 15% or so for the ones that do take something. Some take 20, some take a little more, some take a little less. But it's hard to stomach giving up that much from getting just getting your song from A to B. But I just for the record, have you hired a playlisting service or anything to kind of promote your songs on streaming services?
No.
Okay.
And I think it's just because I understand why people do, and I hear the pitches all the time. You know, I see the pitches all that I see what it, and I generally, they wouldn't do much for me, but and I could promote via social media, or, you know, my YouTube channel is, I don't know, 330,000 subs. Like, it would be much more effective for me to just say, I have a new album coming out on one of those platforms. And I don't even like doing that. I just like kind of keeping it its own thing. So, but no, for the record, I've never hired one of those services in my life.
Yeah. And I, you know, I have to hit that point because, from my conversations with distributors and Spotify, you know, they just assume that every, fraudulent stream, all the fraudulent streaming activity they detected on these songs on artist music, is because of the fault of the artist.
Yeah.
There's a lot of artist blaming happening right now, which is very frustrating. And you know, I've been making that known directly to these distributors. I mean, I sat down with Andrea yesterday, and the CEO of TuneCore, and you know, talked with DistroKid and Spotify and all of them. And I'm trying to make the case as well. I'm just like, you know, stop calling these artists bad actors and like claiming, I mean, you should, the language, I don't know, you didn't get any notifications, but the language that TuneCore and DistroKid have been using with their artists is, I mean, it's insulting. It's, and it's extremely aggressive. I mean, I saw a TuneCore notice, somebody sent me a screenshot. It said like, where is this? It's like, do not contact us in attempts to reinstate these releases, as you will not be successful. Any attempts to re-upload, repackage, or redistribute one of these releases, even as a different UPC or IRC, will be blocked and not subject to refund. Doing so will jeopardize your relationship. It says, please note, there's no situation, in all caps, all bold, where these will be reinstated. And it's like, guys, this is to their customers.
Yeah.
These are to their, you know, the people that are paying them. And I mean, DistroKid's not much better either. I mean, seen their things too. They make their artists take a test. They have to watch a video and click, check boxes saying that they didn't hire a service. They won't ever hire a service. But then it's weird because like, DistroKid actively promotes their
Wheel
of Playlist, but also they have a thing called Playlister, which only is accessible to DistroKid customers. So you log in, and I've released music through DistroKid and TuneCore, and so I can log in and use my account. And I'm looking at this Playlister thing, and literally, you just search a genre, and all these playlists come up, and with contact information. Initially, like, oh wow, this is great. But then some of the contact information is SubmitHub, and SubmitHub is famously kind of you pay the Playlisters just for consideration to listen to music for them. It's this like workaround, so you're not actually paying for inclusion or whatever. But I've heard a lot of people that use SubmitHub to pay to get their music on these play or be considered to get their music on the playlist. Those playlists oftentimes are botted. It flags them. So it's like, on one hand, DistroKid's like, check a box to say you will never pay for a service or promotion or whatever. And then you could just make a few more clicks on the DistroKid website and it says, here, go submit right here to SubmitHub and pay to submit your music. And it's like, it's this cognitive dissonance that no wonder artists are confused on what they're supposed to do to promote their music.
Yeah. And if you exit the music industry and if you like listen to everything that you just described, if you're just an economist who didn't pay any attention to music industry or IP or anything, the takeaway would be that the average independent musician's intellectual property has negative value. You're spending more. And close to two-thirds of the people I surveyed, I had a survey with a couple hundred people who were self-releasing. Over two-thirds of them were paying more money just to distribute their music than they were making back. And so it's not surprising, but it's significant to actually say, okay, well, if you're a musician, releasing your music actually has, you are playing a lottery at that point, if you're an independent musician. And I think my advice to a lot of musicians now is to maybe not to get value from the businessification of your music and get value from the process of writing it, because that's why you're a musician in the first place, is because you love doing it.
Absolutely.
And time spent making music is a wonderful, beautiful thing. And being a musician is a gift. You can communicate without using a language, you know, it's in a way that transcends language. It's appreciating those things. Right now, especially with people worried about AI taking away their music ability. I'm not even sure. I always thought that was one of the most absurd things in the world, because I'm not going to quit making music because of AI. You know, like I don't know who would, but.
Well, you're right. And it is something to remember. You know, we all have to kind of check ourselves. It's just like, why are we in music? And it's, but on one hand, it's like, yes, we started in music because we love it theoretically, and we do this because we love it and we want to do it and it feeds our soul and it is a gift and all of that. But it can also be a career and a business. And if you want to make it your career and business, then unfortunately, we have to figure all of this out on the how to make it a business. And yes, I mean, like most startup companies, you're not profit. You have to invest a lot of money up front with the hopes that it will return 100-fold, 1,000-fold, 10,000-fold down the line. I think we're all understanding that, like, yes, the people that you survey, just like most startup companies, most musicians are investing a lot more money up front than they're making back right now. And then hopefully it'll pay back down the line. But, you know, a lot, but that's the other thing is, like, most people outside the music industry just don't understand why we do what we do. It doesn't make sense to them because they're like, well, you're not making any money. You're spending money to do this. What are you doing it for? And it's just like you can't really argue with that. But yeah.
Yeah. Well, there's a validation too. And that was another thing is I think a lot of people who buy streams or try to get on playlisting services, they're not doing it for the income, they're doing it just so they have the number, so they look a little bit more legitimate to other artists or other listeners. And there's this weird social element to it that I mean, I guess I understand it, but I always try to not think of it that way, and I always have, just because I would just be so defeated by looking at music competitively. Yep. I would be very defeated by it. But yeah, I look back to, like, I'm sure you remember the, like, if you have 1,000 fans, you can make it. If the sort of
1,000 true fans, yeah, right? But if a thousand people spend $100 a year on you, then you keep those for life, and that's you now can sustain a career for the rest of your life.
Right? Just you could tour. And it was generally a pretty good thing to go by. And in those periods of time, I was making most of the money I was making was from publishing and from writing music for ads and things like that, way more than iTunes sales and whatever else, CD sales even. But it's interesting now to, like, look at how much I've stopped writing music for ads entirely a while ago, not because of, like, ethical reasons, but because the payouts just kept getting lower and lower. Like the win money was, I always call it the win money, but when you land an ad, the payout was going away. And then a lot of newer agencies aren't paying demo fees anymore. And so it's like, okay, so that's happening.
Right.
Publishing, if your music gets used in a movie trailer or something like that, I've seen six figures for one song before. Now 20 is insanely good. And so you, like, look at these prices going down, whereas, you know, inflation for everything else is going up. And you start seeing that artists start just kind of being, it's just being siphoned out. And that, in combination with streaming and in combination with post-COVID touring, like, I played my, what I call right now, my last show in 2022, because I had toured my entire life, and I'm not doing it anymore. It's crazy. And the last couple of shows I did play, I asked for an absurd amount of money, you know, way more than I normally would, because I couldn't string a tour together the way that I used to be able to. And so,
sure,
play one show, I'd have to go with all my gear to one place, to a festival or something. And then if I play a festival, if I have that true fan will then have to pay, you know, $200-$300 just to see a show, because they're paying for a festival ticket. And I just said, okay, well, I guess I just don't want to be in this micro economy anymore, you know? So, I mean, it's sad what's happening. It's pretty crazy though.
So what's your solution? I mean, is it just to join this startup and to be on boards of startups and help, you know, that's the where you're going to make money? Or what do you see as the future of how artists can sustain?
You'll love this answer. I've made more from shorting Spotify than I have from my Spotify royalties, which is kind of,
what do you mean by that? Explain that.
Like shorting the stock of Spotify, of watching, because I know enough about this industry to be able to predict when Spotify is going to have a bad earnings report or a good earnings report. And so I've played the stock market to that advantage, to when I know that when I feel like they haven't had as much growth as people expect them to, because that, you know, that's generally, I'm kind of in that world every day. And so it's easier to to tell what's happening.
So your course of action is get out of music completely and just play the stock market game?
No, I mean, I suppose if I got out of music completely, I wouldn't have the day-to-day conversations and the understanding to be able to like leverage that information in a way that's good for me. But no, I mean, I do that. I do research. I take like research contracts, stuff like that. I have a YouTube channel that is one of the more popular ones in the music production world. And I'm mostly going into like science content and I guess even sort of sociology and journalism content and stuff. And then the YouTube channel exists in a nonprofit organization that I run.
Okay.
And so, I mean, a lot of it is, I just try, I'm doing a lot of things. I have my fingers in a lot of pies, as someone said once. And then VoiceSwap is just an extension of that. Obviously, if the company gets huge, I would make money from that because I own equity in it. But ultimately, the purpose of the company was I felt like we missed the train with streaming when it comes to independent musicians getting paid and stuff. And here now we see another train coming and we're like, okay, well let's try this. I've talked to senators about AI bills that are being drafted. We're really trying to make I believe that AI is going to be a phase in creativity, because I don't think that it has a huge amount of value with creative things. But I do think that where it will stick is allowing you to make your own AI model of your voice and then eventually giving you the tools to do it yourself creatively, how you want to do it, and then make money from licensing that elsewhere for other artists who want to use it, or for even if, it was to be used in film dubbing. Working with like translation. Mm-hmm. Yeah. One thing that we did a thing with Ruth Royal where we took one of her songs and used AI to have it translated to a bunch of different languages. So it could be heard the native languages in different regions with her voice, with the same melody and everything like that. And so
cool.
Yeah. But
yeah, it's nice to hear that you're leaning in on AI. And I think, as an industry and as artists, artists should be leading that front, not the labels, and leaning in on, figuring out what is ethical and sustainable and equitable for how we use AI, because it can be just a tool, and it can also be used to in certain instances replace artists and songwriters and take money away. I mean, we have to be careful about it. And, I had the CEO of Endel, an AI music company, on the show not too long ago. And Endel is they call it a wellness company, and they make,
Familiar with them.
So they make, And, both Universal and Warner have struck deals with them. So they are making, wellness versions of Universal back catalog, or even some of their newer artists are doing it. And, that's fine on one side. But on the other side, which I wasn't okay with, is that they've also flooded the DSPs with their own AI generated music that now they're literally pulling money out of the pot to their own company, and there are no real artists behind that. They're just pumping out this quote unquote wellness meditation music, and it's just AI generated. Yeah. So you have a guy in a room hitting refresh, and that's the new song, and then distribute, and now they've trained the algorithms, so they're on all of these popular playlists, and they have millions and millions of streams, hundreds of thousands of monthly listeners to these like AI generated music from this company.
Yeah. I mean, there's like two sides of it. There's but the ethical side is incredibly complicated, because you think of it, because just like, for the record, I've been interested in AI with like generative melodies on my modular synth, things like that, for as long as I've been able to play with that. From my own perspective, I never thought of it as like an industry thing. It's fun to make generative melodies and play the guitar with them or play the piano with them. Like, these are things that I just do in my free time that I don't have anymore.
Sure.
So, but when it comes to, my entry into AI in tech is mostly from people blowing whistles saying, this is really bad. This is taking money away from us. And just sort of realizing like, well, I could either be really mad about it, like I am with everything yep. else that's happening to artists, or I could actually try and do something yep. And try and, you know, see what's there. And so there's that aspect of it. It's an interesting ethical thing, because I guess if there was a song that I heard on Spotify or something that was made with AI that was completely generated, and this hasn't happened to me yet. No song has passed mm-hmm. the Turing test that has been completely, you know, that has been made through Suno or something that's completely AI generated, but that I know of. But yeah, if I really that liked you know. A song that was AI generated, like that's okay, right? Like that's still a song that I enjoy listening to, but it probably should be not get royalties. It probably should get a flat fee or something like that. Like Spotify should probably handle mm-hmm. those things differently. And there should be some rules. You know, it doesn't make sense to pay. Copyright was not made for AI. You know, that's more of like,
yeah, and I've heard that argument too. I mean, it's just like, well, if you enjoy the song, then what's the difference? Like this company was able to make a song that you enjoyed. And so should they be compensated for that? And so what if a human's not behind it or whatever? And one, like you said, that you know of, none of these songs that are in these wellness playlists on Spotify are denoted made by AI. I only know this because I went down the rabbit hole and I'm just like, okay, who released this song? This is from the artist named Endel. I then sat down with the CEO and I asked him, I was like, so what did, how was this song created? Who made it? He's like, well, it was this producer. I'm like, all right, there's 8 songwriters listed here. Yeah. You're one of them. Are you a songwriter? Well, we're the co-founders of the company. I'm like, okay. So that, you know, yeah. And my issue is just like, because it's literally the way that the royalty system is set up is that it's literally taking money out of the pot and into that company, which is just where that becomes challenging, because like no human, maybe except for you, can release that much volume of music, you know, sure. you know, in such a short amount of time. And they've released thousands and thousands of songs over the last year and a half. And so it's like, we just can't keep up. And the algorithm simply just rewards that behavior right now.
Yeah. And I think like maybe a good way to combat this would be with VoiceSwap, for example, we have our files are watermarked. So if, and we also, we're using, I don't want to mention the partnership without like getting clearance. I don't know if it's a public statement yet, but if you're familiar with like ACR Cloud, we're using something similar to that, to where you can, if somebody were to generate some vocals from one of our vocalists and then use it in, and then put it on Spotify without paying them, it would be caught. Like it would be something that we could find. We could verify that it was using AI to do it and that there were royalties that had to be paid out somewhere. Cool. I think a combination of that with what's happening with these AI generated songs on music, I think that there's a solution there. And really somebody's always going to circumvent the system. Like that's always going to be something that happens. But if you give people the tools, and then if those tools have some formal watermarking on them and some sort of certification, then you'll just have a lot more people using AI to make music. That music won't be paid royalties. It'll be paid as a business to business type thing. And that side of it, I don't want to be involved in. You know, I'd like to be involved in like the legislation to make that a thing. But I don't want to line my pockets with like, I just want to make music. I'd love to retire and make music. Like that would be my ultimate rest of my life plan. But, another interesting thing that's happening with the ethics of AI right now is that I'm seeing a lot of people sort of want to be the police for it and wanting to be the certifier or wanting to be the, and a lot of companies are kind of signing on that. Like everybody's trying to look really good. And one of the things that's getting attacked a lot is base models. And so from my perspective, to break this down for your listeners as easily as possible, like a lot of record labels, BMAT, for example, won't work with any AI company that uses certain base models. And
what do you mean by base model?
So when basically all of the voice cloning services that exist, whether they admit it or not, they're almost certainly using one of two base models, Sovitz SVC or RVC. These are base models that were made a couple of years ago. They're continuously updated. And what they contain is thousands of hours of vocal words and songs and things like that. But what they're actually training is how words work, how breathing works, how language works, things like that. Not necessarily pulling the songs out, but training how to be sound like a human. That's what the base models do. And then, for example, I've made models of, I've worked with Imogen Heap, right? So I've made models of her voice. So she's supplied me.
Previous guest of the show.
Pardon?
Previous guest of the show.
Oh,
yeah,
cool. Yeah, I love it.
Great.
Yeah,
she's great.
So for example, I've made models of her voice. She supplied me with like lots of data, and her singing and her voice, that's a model on top of that. So there's like the Imogen model, and then below the Imogen model, there's the base model that just sort of understands how to make the Imogen model. Now, at VoiceSwap, we're making our own base model, which is an insane amount of work. It's like, one of the people who made RVC actually is working with VoiceSwap. And so we're the only vocal company that's doing this. But my point here is that other companies that are using the open source models, they're not stealing melodies. They're not stealing any copyrightable thing. It's just that those exist inside the thing that they're studying. And so another way that I've described this with base models for music, for example, is what you're get. A great example is a kick drum. Like if you hit a cymbal, a crash cymbal, you always want to hit a kick drum with it. Like otherwise, you know, if you're playing rock, even jazz, you know, you always want to, when you got a crash, you want both those playing at the same time. AI figures that out in the base model. That's not a copyrightable thing. That's just how music works the way that we understand it. And then the model on top of that is what pulls music out of, I mean, I've found evidence that my own music is in some music generator models, right? The model that's on top of that is what pulls melodies and voices and things that are actually potentially copyrightable out. And so explaining this to Senate, it's like really difficult to, because it's, everything's moving so fast, and it's not a matter of what's being used. It's a matter of if it is actually causing any form of loss to a particular musician, because that's what defines intellectual property.
Do you think that these models should have, I mean, I don't believe they did, but do you think they should have compensated the artists' music and songwriters' music that they trained on to create this model?
Yeah, certainly, especially the models that exist above the base models. The base models, it's too hard to say because it's already happened. Everything is so,
they could have pulled it from YouTube. Or
everything
whatever.
Is so easily obfuscated, and you need so much data. You need like humanities music to make one, to understand how music's made. But the things on top of it that are used in Suno, that are used by like Stability, by Facebook, by all of them. I mean, frankly, I do believe that they should have started making the models compensating the musicians. And when you have I don't know that much about like what goes into Suno AI or something like that, but I do know with the other voice cloning companies, because that's just the line of work that I'm in with this. And I can say with almost 100% certainty that if the current AI bill that's being drafted by Senate gets pushed through, VoiceSwap will be the only company that can legally do vocal inference or voice cloning. Like, it's that bad, and because we're the only ones who have actually had every single model that we've created. We're actually following, we're compensating them in a way where they have to have consent for every single time that it's used.
That it's used, and also, the model that you're building, was that trained? The base model, was that trained on artists' music who opted in and got compensated for
it? Yes, and we are being so careful with it that even the melody that they sing, they have to own the rights to, or it has to be public domain. So
okay, great.
So it's like me telling
well, that,
you.
That sounds like the right way
so
to do it.
So it's crazy because it's like me telling you to sing for 3 hours and you can't sing any song that you don't own the copyright to. You know, it's like it gets thinner and thinner to actually follow the rules to make this something that's possible. And hopefully, because it costs a lot of money and a lot of computing hours to actually make a base model. And hopefully, we have an improved base model that actually is trained 100% on consensual data sets, which will be.
That's great. Have you read the book How Music Got Free?
No, but that sounds right up my alley.
You have to. I figured that this is like one of your go-tos. First off, you got to read this book. It's by Stephen Witt. Okay. Came out in like 2016. It's funny because like it starts back at the creation of the MP3 with the German engineers and just like how they created the technology and like the wars. Apparently the MP2 was supposed to be the technology that took over. Like it was winning all of the like nerdy tech awards back in the, you know, the 80s and the 90s and stuff like that. And the MP3 by these scrappy German engineers like almost never made it out. And then it just kind of talks about how all this happens. It's funny. Like it sounds like where they were at in the late 80s is kind of like where AI based model technology is at like right now. And just like the technology that is being created. And it's just like, you know, obviously the MP3 won out and then eventually like, you know, M4A and AICC, like all of these things that I never really knew about or thought about, but yeah, it's kind of talks about the evolution of that.
It's interesting. Yeah. And it's kind of funny that like the open source ones never really take off. Like, or yeah, Vorbis, that was like, wasn't that the open source one that they made that's technically better? But yeah, I mean, that's always with everything.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, I didn't realize this, but back in the day, the MP3, when Microsoft first adopted it, they were like the first big company to adopt the MP3. They had to pay the German engineers a license fee for every usage of the MP3. Obviously, that stopped happening, you know, with Napster and whatever. But back in like the 90s, they were paying for the usage of the license.
That's probably why they pushed WMA so hard for like that five-year period where like
Windows Media Player or whatever.
If you remember, you'd have to like, you weren't able to like listen to it on a different computer. It had all these weird things. And I think it got cracked like within a week of release or something, of course. Yep. But the old DRM that people used to try is kind of funny.
Yeah. Well, Ben, thank you so much for chatting with me about it. Super fascinating. It was great. I loved the direction that this went, and it's cool to hear everything that you're working on. And I'm glad to hear that you're in the trenches with this next frontier of creation and technology and music. And you know, we all know it's heading in this direction. And I appreciate that. And I think all artists can appreciate that, you know, we have artists on the ground in the trenches talking with legislators, helping kind of create policy. And it's not just the major labels and those with the most influence and power and money like it's historically been, because as we know, the majors never really have the artist's best interest in mind. They have their own best interest in mind. And so it's nice that there are artists.
Yeah. And one thing to add to that I always kind of, Mike Palczynski always reminds me of this, is that AI, if you look at it from a certain perspective, and if we do it right, it creates a new form of intellectual property for artists, which is kind of like, wow. Like when I first
totally new revenue
first told
stream.
Me that, I was like, that's actually true. Like this is an entirely new side to a license that an artist can take.
Well, I mean, Grimes was, you know, the first artist most famously where she opted in early on and she created a whole new revenue stream that she wasn't a part of at all. And there's a whole, you know, new artist artist profile of Grimes AI, where anyone could use her voice and likeness, and she's getting paid theoretically 50% on every all the revenues that's generated from any of the tracks. And so, like, there you go, it's already kind of happening, which is great, and she doesn't even have to do anything; just licenses her.
And to go full circle, I've heard from and seen a lot of cases where people signed up for TuneCore so they could use Grimes's voice on a release and then had their music pulled for playlisting or fraud or accusations. So, yeah.
Of course. Well, Ben, this has been great. Thank you so much. I have one final question that I ask everyone who comes on the show, and that is, what does it mean to you to make it in the new music business?
Well, to make it, if you can get the chills while playing music, you've made it. Because, like, everything else is just it's a stairway that never ends, and your legs will get tired. You'll die on the stairs. If you enjoy making music and if you're able to express yourself doing it, if it provides you a form of meditation and therapy, then you've made it. That's all you need, because you're just wanting to be happy at the end of the day. Everything else doesn't really matter.
Ben Jordan, thank you so much. That's great.
Thank you.
Today's episode was edited by Ari Davids, with music by Brassroots District, and produced by all the great people at Ari's Take. This episode is brought to you by DistroKid. DistroKid is a distribution service that can get your music into all the DSPs like Spotify, Apple Music, TikTok, Tidal, Instagram. Over a million artists have used DistroKid. I'm one of those artists. I've used DistroKid to get my music out, distribute some of my songs. As you know, as I look into all of these distribution services, I test them out. And DistroKid is great. They offer a ton of features, annual fee, unlimited uploads, and you keep 100% of your royalties. Check out distrokid.com.